This is Up to Date. I'm Stephen Steigman. Compared to other areas of the country, Missouri and Kansas have it pretty good when it comes to energy pricing. As January of this year, the national average retail price per kilowatt hour was 9.83 cents. Missouri, 7.78 cents. Kansas, 8.35 cents. This places them in the top 18 states with the lowest prices for electricity. And when was the last time there was a major power outage in this area that wasn't weather-related? Each state has a series of power plants using various fuel sources to maintain production of those kilowatts and keep the electricity coming through the wires. But how well will the current system hold up as demand increases and certain fuels are harder to obtain? And how do we keep the lights on? Helping us to look at the energy issues facing Missouri and Kansas are Josh Campbell. He's executive director of the Missouri Energy Initiative, which works on bringing various sectors of the state's economy together in efforts, collaborative efforts on energy issues. He joins us on the line from Jefferson City this morning. Josh Campbell, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Thank you, Stephen.
And James Ludwig is Executive Vice President of Public Affairs and Consumer Services for Westar Energy, the largest utility company in Kansas, serving 687,000 residential, commercial, and industrial customers. Jim Ludwig, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, Josh, let's start with you. Break down the different energy sources being used to power Missouri right now.
Missouri is actually fairly simple compared to some of the eastern and western coast states. Missouri is predominantly powered by coal, near 85%. And then we have about 10%, which comes from the nuclear power plant in Callaway. And then the remainder, 8 to 9%, comes from natural gas. And then we have, depending upon where you're at, 1 to 2% coming from renewables, most of which comes from hydropower.
So Missouri has its own nuclear and hydro production, but does it produce its own coal or gas, or are 100% of those brought in from other states?
Our fuel sources are all imported, mostly from Wyoming, the Powder Basin, where our coal comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, Missouri was the first state to mine for coal west of the Mississippi, but we don't do that anymore.
Is it that we don't have it, or just not cost-effective?
It's not cost-effective.
You see those coal trains heading through Kansas City all day long, and you wonder just how much coal it takes to fire a power plant. Does it make more economic sense for Missouri to look at to develop more energy sources within the state? And which ones could it realistically expect to do on a larger scale?
Well, the interesting thing when you consider energy resources, you have to consider cost, which you mentioned earlier. At 7 cents a kilowatt, it's really difficult to go towards and use wind, where Kansas is able to use because they have such abundance, when it's an increased price. These are things that the consumer has to consider, as well as the Public Service Commission in this state regulates three of the major utilities, which limits their ability to go out and build a particular type of power plant that is not cost-effective. So that is why when we talk with policymakers and groups, we see an all-of-the-above or a what we would call a silver buckshot method. And to ensure for future regulations, both environmental and others, it would be wise and is wise and considered wise by most people to have a balanced portfolio that includes natural gas, coal, nuclear power, renewable power, both wind and solar, which Missouri does have the capacity. But one thing that is often missed that needs to be considered and is being considered now in Missouri is energy efficiency, both on the industry side, industrial side, with combined heat and power, as well as in the home.
Hmm. We'll get to that a little bit later. Jim Ludwig from Westar, break down the different energy sources being used to power Kansas right now.
Yeah, we're very similar in respects to Josh. For our company, about 75% of the electricity on average we'll make each year comes from our coal plants. About 15% comes from a nuclear plant that we co-own. It's called Wolf Creek Nuclear Plant. The balance then is natural gas, but a growing component of our energy resource is wind, as Josh mentioned. We have terrific wind resources in Kansas, and we're leveraging those. We get some of the most attractive prices for wind power in the country. But even having said that, wind is marginally higher than our other costs. So it does drive prices up, but not nearly as dramatically for our customers as it does in other areas of the country.
I was surprised to learn that there aren't any major solar farms in Kansas. With its topography and number of sunny days, you'd think that Kansas would have a few. Are there any, or even a small on a small scale that you know of?
Most of the solar power in Kansas is on a small scale at the distribution level, where individual customers may put panels on their home or on their business. In spite of the fact that Kansas does have a lot of sunny days, it is not particularly cost effective in most applications yet in Kansas. The good news is that solar power costs are declining, and as some other cost pressures force up the price of other sources of generation, I think those lines will intersect. So we're in the future, I would expect to see a bit more solar, but I don't know that it will ever have a predominant role.
Hmm. Your company has developed a comprehensive energy plan with the caveat that no one can predict the future. It also notes that with changes in recent years, quote, no longer could we count on the market following a sustained direction for any reasonable period of time. No longer could we count on predictable costs for labor or materials. In fact, there are now so many influential and uncontrollable variables, including public and political sentiments about the choices we face as a society on energy and climate concerns, we concluded that we must start finding a way to reflect them in our thinking, unquote. How do these realizations change the corporate mindset at Westar?
Josh made reference to it. You know, he referred to the all of the above energy policy, or I think he called it the silver buckshot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that we do, and once we admit to ourselves that we really are not very good at predicting the future, is to say, well, how do we you know, always get a base hit? And with a good mix of a portfolio, including coal resources, nuclear, natural gas, wind, some distributed generation, and as Josh mentioned, energy efficiency, we can usually get a base hit. We're not swinging for the fences. We probably won't get a home run, but we're not going to strike out either. And so we think that it's very important that we maintain that diversity of supply, because we don't want to take too big a bet on any one of them, since we really can't predict the labor costs associated with them, the commodity costs, the equipment costs. Those are in a constant state of flux.
Mm-hmm. And certainly regulatory costs as well. I mean, do you think this mindset is contributing to speculation that Sunflower Energy's much-debated Holcomb plant will never be built?
You know, I don't know for sure, you know, what the prospects of that plant are. The main issues confronting them right now are to get through the regulatory and legal challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, though, there was a time a few years ago when Westar was looking at building a new coal plant, and it's a surprise to most folks, because they think, well, you must have delayed that. You put it on indefinite suspension because of all the concerns about climate change.
Mm-hmm.
But at the time we put them in suspension in late 2006, believe it or not, climate change wasn't even a very predominant topic at the time. What we were observing, however, were the costs of the equipment and the steel and the labor escalating so much that when we first started evaluating potential sites for a coal plant, by the time we suspended it, the cost of the plant would have nearly doubled.
Wow. Well, how do the costs compare for constructing a coal plant versus a nuclear plant, which must be exceedingly expensive as well, and versus wind energy or natural gas for that matter?
Yeah, there are a couple ways to look at that. But one is, what would it cost if we were starting from scratch? And of course, none of us are. So probably the more relevant question is, what's the cost component of our current mix? A nuclear plant is a very expensive proposition. Once it's up and running, it operates at a pretty low cost in terms of its fuel. To kind of put it in perspective, if you looked at the cost per kilowatt hour for using uranium at a nuclear plant, it's maybe 5 or 6 tenths of a penny per kilowatt hour. For our coal fleet, that would compare to about 1.7 or 8 cents a kilowatt hour. Natural gas, even with natural gas prices being fairly low, it will be as high as 5 to 6 cents a kilowatt hour. And that's why we use natural gas so sparingly during those peak hot summer days like we've been having to meet, you know, customers' needs at the most extreme periods. And then wind, we've been able, as I said, to get it very cost effectively. And there are many advantages for Kansas because we have really good wind resources, but we only get the energy when the wind blows. So, you know, it's really a, you should think of it as a fuel substitute, not as a source of generation that we can just count on 24/7.
You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. We're talking this hour about energy production and security in Kansas and Missouri. Our guests are Josh Campbell, Executive Director of the Missouri Energy Initiative, and James Ludwig, Executive Vice President for Westar Energy. If you'd like to join our conversation, we'd like to have you. Our phone number is 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us. Our address is uptodate@kcur.org. And don't forget, there's also a discussion going on KCUR's Facebook page, or finally, feel free to tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Josh, let's talk for a moment about the Missouri Energy Efficiency Investment Act, which was passed in 2009. What does it say, and what does it mean for energy producers?
The Missouri Energy Efficiency Act, or MEEA, is a great step forward for Missouri because it provides the regulated utilities an opportunity to get some type of return on the investments they make with energy efficiency. The interesting thing about, or the important thing to realize when it comes to energy efficiency, is we are asking a company to do something that is completely contradictory that they would do normally, which is to sell more of their product. So what MEEA does is provide them a small return for the amount of energy they can save based on that amount. So specifically, the only proposal that has been accepted so far is Ameren, Missouri, on the eastern half of Missouri, but both Case B&L, Great Plains, and Empire are in the works of getting their proposals together. But that would bring in about $145 million into energy efficiency and save more than 800,000 megawatts of power. Specifically, what it does is have our utilities go from spending hundreds of thousands of dollars tens of millions of dollars on.
No, you still with us, Josh?
Yes.
Okay, sorry. You cut out there. Well, let me move on here. The American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy noted that since the act passed, that, quote, progress towards implementation has hit major barriers as regulators, utilities, and stakeholders try and come to a consensus on how to move forward with comprehensive utility programs. Who are the holdouts here, or is everyone too interested in getting their share of the pie?
Well, the good news is that I'm not sure when ACEEE came out with that note, but just, I want to say it was last month, the Public Service Commission, interested parties such as environmental groups, industry groups, and the utility, Ameren, came to a settlement agreement, and that was what I was talking about. Mm-hmm. So the issue was how much investment, or how much return on the investment will the utilities get for the amount of money that they're spending on energy efficiency. Because you can imagine, if they're going to cut 800,000 megawatt hours from usage, that means they're not selling it. So they were trying to figure out, we're going to spend X, and how much of that do we get back? I think we are at the point now where it may not be a perfect law, but from the people I talk to, we are at a point now where the other IOUs will get on board, and we will see close to $200 million spent in Missouri on energy efficiency, which is extremely important because, unlike most things, other energy expenses, there's a higher return on energy efficiency jobs. So, an example, every $1 million spent on energy efficiency creates 17 jobs. And it's a much lower number for general energy expenses.
Well, Josh, of particular interest to our listeners is the smart grid project KCP&L has launched in Kansas City's Green Impact Zone. In fact, the project is set up right outside KCUR's building. This is a $48 million demonstration based on smart generation, smart distribution, and smart consumption of energy. What can you tell us about these three smarts and what KCP&L can learn from all of this?
You are absolutely right. The Green Impact Zone is a great tool. And you know, Westar did actually something similar in Lawrence, but this project is working to look at advanced technologies that will facilitate real-time, two-way communication between the utility and its customers. So when your listeners hear smart grid this and smart grid that, It can mean a lot of different things, but ultimately what it is it is inputting the new technology we have today into the infrastructure that was built 60 to 70 years ago, which simply provides us with more information, which allows us to improve energy efficiency, reduce costs, improve reliability. You'd mentioned blackouts earlier. This is something that will allow distributed generation to increase and reduce the concerns of whether the wind is blowing or sun is shining. This type of materials and data will provide the utilities the opportunity to allow more of these in their service area.
Is this the kind of project where you'd hope the utility would share data and knowledge it gains with energy-related businesses throughout the state? And Jim Ludwig of Westar, are you aware of anything similar to the Smart Grid project in Kansas?
Yes, Josh mentioned that Westar has just initiated or really wrapped up the installation of smart grid technology in the city of Lawrence, Kansas. That's about 45 to 50,000 meters. That's a very promising technology. You had asked the question about sharing information. Today, any customer in Lawrence can go online through our website and view their usage almost in real time. It's about a 15-minute delay.
Wow, that's pretty good.
So it's it provides a lot of knowledge, a lot of information to customers. What we're doing now is working with customers to make sure that that's not just a data dump, that it's something that can be useful to them and instructive for them to become wiser energy consumers.
Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, we don't want them to be overwhelmed by the amount of data. We want them to have the tools at their disposal to really use that information to make them a better energy consumer and to be more productive with the energy that they do consume.
Well, I will admit that I've been scared to look at my electricity bill this summer, but my wife pays it, so great. Well, let's take a break. When we return, we'll continue our conversation about energy policy and security in Missouri and Kansas. I'm Steven Steigman in for Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steven Steigman. If you missed yesterday's conversation about health disparities in the LGBT community in Missouri, you'll find it in all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow, jazz vocalist Karen Allison joins us. She's in town for the Prairie Village Jazz Fest. Also, the role of emoticons in flirting in the workplace. And commentator Victor Wishna returns with our latest installment of A Fan's Notes. This hour, we're talking about electricity production, security, and infrastructure in Kansas and Missouri. Our guests are Josh Campbell, Executive Director of the Missouri Energy Initiative, and James Ludwig, Executive Vice President for Westar Energy. I want to take a few calls here, 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. You can also email us uptodate@kcur.org. Matt from Kansas City, Kansas, thanks for holding the line for us. Matt, are you there? Let's try David in Overland Park. David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. You were mentioning earlier about the inconsistency of wind. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, I'm sorry. I thought you got cut off. You were talking about the inconsistency of wind power, and I run a nonprofit that posts on Facebook all the time, and one of the things that I was looking at just last week was that England and the UA, or European Union, I'm sorry, EU, was having the same discussion. And I don't know if this comes under the smart grid thing or not, but they were saying that they had a way to switch from one wind station to another in case one was, you know, either down for repairs or it was, you know, not a windy day in that neighborhood. They could switch over to another one that would still be able to take its place on the grid. And I was wondering if that was something that's in the plans for Kansas or if that would have to be a cooperation between different state utility companies. How would that work?
David, thanks for the phone call. James Ludwig from Westar, do you want to address that?
Sure. It's an excellent question. Currently, we have three wind farms, and we have scattered them throughout high wind areas in Kansas. In part for the very reason that the caller mentioned, so that we've got some diversity of geography, and there's a chance that if the wind's not blowing, say, in north central Kansas, it might be blowing in south central Kansas. And so we would, you know, help even out the supply. And we found that that is working, and we're adding yet more wind. Just this year will more than double our commitment. And those other wind farms are geographically dispersed as well. It helps. One of the things, though, that every form of generation has its advantages and disadvantages. With respect to the intermittency of wind, in spite of the fact that the High Plains and Kansas have great wind conditions for generating power, quite often we find that when it's particularly hot, so that when customers are needing electricity most, happens to coincide with the times that sometimes the wind gets really calm and still in Kansas. So, you know, it's in an inverse relationship. When you really want it most, you aren't getting it. And that turns out to be a seasonal situation as well. We sometimes have the best winds in Kansas during the spring and the fall.
Hmm.
That's kind of tranche periods for electric usage. That's not an indictment against wind. We just have to integrate wind into our system so that we can use it as effectively as it will perform for us.
What are you hearing in the ways of storage techniques and methods that are being developed right now? And where do you think we're going to be 5 or 10 years from now?
Storage of electricity is it's almost kind of like the Holy Grail.
Uh-huh.
You know, if it could be done, it would transform the industry.
That and cold fusion.
Yeah. But it is, you know, there's a lot of research being done. I think one of the main challenges to energy storage, and I'm cautiously optimistic about it, but one of the main challenges in energy storage is this. We never really create energy. We just transform it from one source or one type to another. And at every transformation, it's just the law of physics, there are tremendous losses. There are tremendous inefficiencies. So let's say we want to store wind power as compressed air. Well, you use up a lot of energy compressing the air. You use up some energy keeping it compressed. And you lose some when you take it out of compression to spin a turbine. So in each step, there are these inefficiencies that occur when you're attempting to store electricity. And that's kind of the physical laws that are really hard to overcome, to compensate for. I wouldn't suggest it's impossible. And on a small scale, we really see some promising work being done. If you own an iPad, that little instrument has a very powerful battery in it.
Mm-hmm.
We just haven't mastered it on a large scale yet to store electricity, at utility scale.
Hmm. Let's take a call from Jack in Overland Park, Kansas. Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I've been reading a lot about fracking and what appears to be a revolution in the extraction of natural gas, and the fact that there's currently an oversupply, and supplies are estimated for our country for about 100 years. So I'm wondering what the plan is to make greater use of that in power generation.
Hmm. Good question. Josh Campbell from the Missouri Energy Initiative, tell us what kind of the future holds for natural gas.
Well, the caller is absolutely right. All the data shows that the United States is sitting on a huge wealth of natural gas, the biggest issue through the form of fracking. The biggest issue is going to be how are we going to get access to it, and are there going to be regulations, environmental and otherwise, that inhibit that. We're in conversations with a variety of different folks on this particular topic, but one that seems to have a lot of movement and a lot of interest, specifically for the last reason that Jim was discussing, which is the loss of energy, is using natural gas in direct energy components. So that is heating and cooling of home and not necessarily a utility-sized natural gas facility, or using them for fleet transformations. That is extremely efficient, and Missouri and Kansas region specifically is actually ahead of the curve doing some research and other studies specifically on fleet transformation for natural gas. So I think that's a great opportunity for our region, not so much for Missouri. We don't do a lot of that, though we have seen a 200% increase in the number of wells. We are nowhere near the capacity of Kansas when it comes to natural gas.
In the few moments we have left, I want to talk a little bit about infrastructure. Are we delivering 21st century energy with an infrastructure largely built in the 20th century? Let's go to James for that one.
Yeah, that's a great question. The utilities typically that serve customers are over 100 years old. Westar's over 100 years old. Kansas City Power and Light and its predecessor companies date way back. And we have meters, for example, in the field that are older than I am. You know, they've been out there 60 years or longer, and they're just as accurate today as they were the day they were installed. So, you know, there's some infrastructure that's very dependable and still has lasting value, and so I think it can continue to serve. But what we really want to leverage is the new technology and innovation that is currently being applied in other areas. We're not creating new technologies necessarily. We're taking known technologies and innovation and applying them to the electric utility business. And I think there's tremendous opportunity in that arena. Josh outlined some of it with respect to how it can help customers. In other ways, it will not even appear to customers, but still be very beneficial. For example, going back to Lawrence, where we have a smart grid system, we can automate connects and disconnects and time them at customers' convenience and never roll a truck out to their residence or their business to make that happen. It's a great customer convenience, but it's also a tremendous cost savings to avoid the fuel costs, the transportation costs, the time involved, some of the labor costs associated with it. So, you know, applying new existing technologies to our industry, I think, holds forth a lot of promise.
Josh Campbell, how secure is our energy production and delivery?
It really depends on who you talk to. A lot of people would be concerned with the amount of electronics being injected into our electric system for terrorism components. But when it comes down to the brass tacks, Jim is right. We're trying to operate a 21st century energy unit on 100-year-old technology. And while it can do the traditional move electron from point A to point B, what's difficult is that distributed generation component. When we want to try and create our own energy at our home, can the current grid accept that energy, displace it, put it to the right place? And the answer is right now, not as well as it should. And that's part of the smart grid technology in the Green Impact Zone. They do have a large energy storage unit there in the Green Impact Zone, working to help fluctuate that and see how it works. And actually, it comes from two Kansas City companies. So I think there's definitely the need for increased infrastructure updates, not to mention one thing that we hadn't mentioned is the wind that's in Kansas. While Missouri doesn't have as much, it is something that they can export. The problem is, do they have the power lines to get it from Kansas to the populated areas in Missouri or further east? And that's something that needs to be more discussed and pushed at a greater amount as well.
A conversation to be continued. Josh Campbell is Executive Director of the Missouri Energy Initiative. James Ludwig is Executive Vice President for Westar Energy. Josh, Jim, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, Brian McTavish on our weekend to-do list.